So it's my pleasure now to introduce the second subject about the different doses in different indication. And the speaker is Frik Verhoey from Amsterdam.
Thank you. These are my disclosures. This is the field of the NOACs. And what you can see here, there are three major NOACs now available. Not all have been already approved, but and also the indications are still not completely approved. But we have three NOACs. One 2A blocker, the Bigatran. Is there a pointer here? The Bigatran, the 2A blocker, and the two 10A blockers, which are available nowadays. And here you see the several indications and where they have been tested. On the venous side, on the arterial side, and also now in artificial heart valves. And I will shortly go through the data. And first the DVT-PE, the deep venous thrombosis prevention or treatment, and also the treatment of pulmonary embolism. And first the data with rivaroxaban, there have been four major trials, two in hip replacements, two in knee replacement. I will not go into detail there, but the, this slide shows the summary of the four trials. And here you see the efficacy of rivaroxaban, the yellow bars, with regard to efficacy and safety. And you must agree that there is more efficacy than a safety issue. Only one trial, there may be a safety issue to record one trial. But in the others, the differences are small. And the benefit largely outweighs the risk, although this is only major bleeding, and there is some more minor bleeding, of course, a little bit more in the new oral anticoagulant. But this, I think, is very clear that it works in this condition. I do not know whether it's approved, but it is working. And when we look at the same agent, the rivaroxaban agent, in DVT treatment, this is the Einstein study where the classical comparator in DVT is treatment with enoxaparin in the first weeks, and then first day, sorry, and then to warfarin, with and here the study drug with rivaroxaban with a twice daily dose for the first time, and then to a single dose. This is the treatment phase, and this is the prevention phase. And already in the treatment phase, there was a clear benefit of rivaroxaban over the classical treatment, the anticoagulant, the parenteral, followed by the oral one. And after stopping the anticoagulation phase, there was a second phase in which patients were continued on rivaroxaban or were given placebo. And you see a huge benefit, but that's, of course, expected. And if you look at the other Einstein study, the PE study, you see more or less the same results, although the benefit was pretty similar to standard therapy. Patients with symptomatic pulmonary embolism were randomized to standard of care with enoxaparin followed by warfarin for a year, or rivaroxaban twice daily in the first weeks, and then changed into a single dose of rivaroxaban, 20 milligrams. I think it was 20 milligrams daily. So this was also a positive trial, but at least a non-inferiority trial. But when you look at bleeding, there was much less bleeding when rivaroxaban was given compared to the standard of therapy. And you see the bleeding, as I already mentioned, is the bleeding with this strategy is highest in the first months, and then it levels off a bit. And here you see the same, but the absolute bleeding rate was much and much lower. This was a good point, and especially I would like to draw your attention to an intracranial bleed. Intracranial was bleeding 10 patients out of 2,400, so it was not a very common complication. But in the rivaroxaban arm, there's only one cerebral bleed, a huge reduction, which of course was statistically significant. And we saw exactly the same in the atrial fibrillation trials, but of course that's a different field. So here I think the 10A blocker is as efficacious as the standard therapy, but it is much and much safer again, especially on this catastrophic complication. Then the Bigatran program it's more or less the same. In the primary prevention in patients undergoing orthopedic surgery, acute VTE treatment and also secondary prevention, huge program too with the Bigatran, and showing more or less the same positive results, except for the situation in secondary prevention after ACS. I'll come to that in a second. And stroke prevention, we are all aware of the RELI trial. A short look at the venous side with the Bigatran. As cardiologists, we are not very familiar with it. These are several trials in the prevention of DVT after orthopedic surgery. Enoxaparin is standard of care. And two doses of the Bigatran once daily have been tested. And you see that, in fact, the benefits are more or less the same, where the higher single dose of the Bigatran daily has the better results, and that's now where this drug has been given. The bleeding side, with the Bigatran in the lower or the higher dose once daily compared to enoxaparin, you see that it is more or less the same. So the drug is non-inferior and probably has the same safety issue in DVT prevention. And now the treatment of DVT. There has also been a trial called RECOVER. And you see, in fact, the same results as we have seen with the rivaroxaban studies, the Einstein studies. Equal efficacy to warfarin in patients with symptomatic DVT, but again, much better safety of the Bigatran over warfarin in total bleeding, and a trend towards a major bleeding with the Bigatran. So I think also promising results for DVT with the 2A blocker. Now, apixaban, the 10A blocker, which is the newest kit on the block in the DVT program. Several studies here. ADVANCE 1, ADVANCE 2, it's a little bit different comparator. This is an American comparator, I think, and this is more the European comparator. The first, and then ADVANCE 3, and this is in a field I will not discuss the role of anticoagulants in acutely ill medical patients. ADVANCE 1, there was showed a benefit in orthopedic surgery, but the difference was did not reach statistical significance. But the safety side was good. There was less bleeding with apixaban compared to the standard of care enoxaparin twice daily. Therefore, the ADVANCE 2 study was a bit different. It was enoxaparin once daily, and there you see the benefit coming of apixaban over enoxaparin, and that was superior with regard to the reduction in DVT, either symptomatic or asymptomatic managed of a diagnosis with phenography. So also here, good results with a 10A blocker. But here you see the dosing is important. Not the dosing of apixaban is important, but the dosing of enoxaparin is important. The comparator dose, we should discuss this as well. If you look here at the apixaban dose, it is half the dose which was used in atrial fibrillation. But this is a lower risk population, as you may know. The orthopedic population had a rather low risk of developing symptomatic DVT, but for asymptomatic DVT, it's quite high. Safety results in this trial is that also major bleeding is less here, but although it's not statistically significant, if you take this bleeding, the clinic. Phase 3 studies are just finished. The AMPLIFY study with apixaban in the VTE treatment, where of course a higher dose is given. As expected, you give a higher dose in treatment of VTE than you give it for prophylaxis. And this study has been finished. It has been already on the internet, but I don't have the data here. And of course, there's also an extension study like in the Einstein program. If a patient finishes the 6 months of anticoagulant treatment, then they get randomized to placebo or apixaban in two doses, 2.5 milligram, which was the prophylactic dose, but also a higher dose in the prevention of recurrence of DVT. So we were looking forward to the results of this. It's a little bit behind the others, but the drug was became available later for study. So this is the venous side. Now the AF, we have seen all the results. I will be very short in this. And sorry, Mike, there has been a meta-analysis, but only of phase 3 trials. And that was recently published in the Annals of Internal Medicine. And it is the meta-analysis of the NOACs in atrial fibrillation, but also on DVT. I'll come to that in a second. And here you see the phase 3 trials put together. It's only hypothesis generating, but you all agree that with regard to the primary endpoint, ischemic stroke issue, you see that there is a reduction of ischemic stroke, but not that much. It's very difficult to come close to warfarin because we know that warfarin is extremely efficacious in the prevention of ischemic stroke in atrial fibrillation. But if and it is a small benefit here. There's also a mortality benefit, which is about the same small benefit. Some trials have a little bit better mortality benefit, but there is no increase in mortality at least. But as I told you before, the huge benefit of the NOACs in AFib, but also in PE treatment, is the reduction of intracranial hemorrhage. And that is a thing that is inherent to warfarin. It's a warfarin problem. It's not a NOAC problem. It's not an antiplatelet problem. It is the NOAC, the warfarin problem. Warfarin, because of its need for an antidote, is not that urgent. We can discuss that. Now, after ACS, I think Mike Gibson has already shown many data on that, but I can summarize them too. The APRIS 2 data, of course, were very disappointing. That was the atrial fibrillation dose of apixaban given to patients who recovered from ACS. It was a typical secondary prevention study. So patients survived their ACS and had their interventions. And then they were randomized to dual antiplatelet therapy, aspirin and clopidogrel, or triple therapy where apixaban was added on that in the full dose. And the trial was stopped prematurely because of bleeding without a clear benefit. And maybe there was in the beginning a minute benefit, but as I told you in the discussion, the bleeding comes first and the benefit comes later. You can only enjoy when you have suffered before. And that's clearly shown here also in this study, which was stopped prematurely. And the reason why, as already discussed, was a huge increase in bleeding. And again, the bleeding with an anticoagulant strategy comes early. And the benefit may come later, but if you stop a trial early, you will miss the sweet times. And of course, this was a reason for the DSMB to be very, very cautious, and they decided to stop the study. And since we learned a lot from that, and Mike told you that already, this trial included patients with a high risk of ischemic events, but it also concurs immediately with a high risk of bleeding. And especially patients who had a prior stroke, ischemic stroke, they are also prone for ICH. We know that already from the thrombolytic studies, maybe you remember that. When patients with a STEMI got a lytic and they had a ischemic stroke before, they had a very high chance of getting an ICH due to the lytic. And the same we see in the era of NOACs, but also in the antiplatelet field. Dual antiplatelet therapy for patients with prior stroke is a dangerous thing. Even with aspirin and clopidogrel, we know that from the MATCH trial, for instance, that dual antiplatelet therapy in general for prior stroke patients is no good. But especially for anticoagulants, it's no good either. Therefore, in the ATLAS study, which has been reviewed by Mike, we saw the same. Now, another study, and that's with the 2A blockers, is the REDEEM study. Maybe you remember the ESTEEM study with cimalagatran, the drug we don't work anymore with. There was a good benefit, but it was in the aspirin era. Now we live in the aspirin and clopidogrel era. And there was a dose-finding study with dabigatran, several doses given. These are the doses we know from atrial fibrillation, and all on top of dual antiplatelet therapy. And you see the bleeding, which was, of course, the primary endpoint in this phase 2 study, increased by dose. These are very low doses. There was already an increase in bleeding, but major bleeding was increased. The clinical relevant minor bleeding was increased, as expected, of course. Was there any benefit? Of course, the trial was way too small to be to show any conclusion, and there was no benefit at all. Even in the higher doses, there was no clear benefit. when you look at stroke, there may be, but the stroke is not an issue mainly in this field, but there was not an increase there. But when you look at non-fatal MI, if any, there was a doubling of non-fatal MI with a 2A blocker. And maybe we can discuss that also in our discussion later on. With the 2A blockers, there is a hint of increased myocardial infarction in the AFib trials, in the RELY trial, and we also saw it already in the EXANTA studies, the Xymela-Gatran studies, in the sportive 3 and 5, and we saw it also in the VTE studies with Xymela-Gatran. There was a signal of more MIs, and here you see it in specific coronary cases. But of course, this is not conclusive either. Maybe we can discuss this. Now, the ATLAS study was already discussed by Mike, and we learned a lot there. First, no prior stroke patients, low-dose aspirin. That was very important because in the APPRAISE 2 study, we were more liberal in aspirin dosing, and we know that the low dose is a sweet spot, as mentioned by Mike, the best efficacy and the acceptable bleeding. And, of course, the two doses we took from the phase 2 study with the lowest risk of bleeding and a signal, more than a signal, of already benefit. And remember, the ATLAS 1 study was the largest phase 2 trial ever done in ACS patients, in post-ACS patients. So we learned a lot from the phase 2 studies and the concurring APPRAISE 2 study. And the results have been shown by Mike, so we'll go through that. Very interesting data, we can discuss that as well, is the reduction in stent thrombosis. That was, and that was not a small reduction, it was a huge reduction, as seen with the neural antiplatelet drugs, which was unexpected and showing that apparently coagulation factors are also important in stent thrombosis. We think that stent thrombosis is a platelet thing, but it's not only a platelet thing, you can see it here. And it was also seen in the prematurely stopped APPRAISE 2 study, had the same reduction in stent thrombosis with apixaban. But because the trial was stopped early, the differences were not statistically significant. Whereas, for instance, in the triple antiplatelet study with Forapaxar, triple versus dual, the addition of Forapaxar did not reduce stent thrombosis at all. So anticoagulation may be a new venue also in stent thrombosis, but of course it has to be confirmed in more studies. Very interesting data. The bleeding slides, I think you showed them as well, Michael. This slide, I think so. So the increase in bleeding, let me go back here, increase in ICH. At the lower dose, which is so efficacious in ATLAS 2, there was an increase, a doubling, but it was statistically significant, but there was no increase in fatal ICH, but be wary, the numbers are very, very small. Then the final point is the artificial heart valves. There have been very few data so far with the NOACs. They are pig data with artificial heart valve in the pig aorta, in the distal aorta. And it was already shown that you need a lot of new anticoagulant when in comparison to warfarin to prevent valve thrombosis. And therefore, there has been one study, or there is one study running, but only with dabigatran. That is the Realign study. Interesting study, led by Frans van der Werf, and my hospital participated heavily in this study. Patients who get an artificial heart valve get surgery, and after surgery, when they are stable and going home, they go home on warfarin, of course, because that is the standard of care in a lower dose if there is a lower risk of valve thrombosis. For instance, in patients who have aortic double door valve, so the modern aortic valve needs a little bit less warfarin, and the mitral valve, for instance, a little bit higher, but it doesn't matter. This is the standard of care. Or they are randomized to dabigatran in very high doses. Why? Because the PIC data showed that you need a much higher dose than we are used to in atrial fibrillation. Where for warfarin, that's not true, but for dabigatran, it was very likely. And they were given 3 doses of dabigatran, the highest dose we know in AFib, and even the double dose of use in atrial fibrillation. Three doses, and that was given at the reconvalescence phase of cardiac surgery. But unfortunately, the trial was stopped prematurely because of a thrombotic issue in the dabigatran arm of the study. So this field is still very shaky. We do not know which dose is appropriate in these patients which need warfarin for life. And if there is a new strategy, it would be fantastic. But there is hope. Realign B is also a concurrent trial, but is in patients with existing valves and mitral valves only, because the risk of valve thrombosis is higher than aortic valve prosthesis. And of course, the warfarin strategy is well known, standard of care. And here the trial is continuing, where there are three blinded study doses of the dabigatran. It's an open-label study, Nancy. I have to say all this. The open-label study, but of course, it is a dose-finding study. And there, I think you are very confident that you can use an open-label design, because we do not know the dose of the 2A blocker in patients who have chronic patients who have mitral valves and, of course, have sinus rhythm, because AFib was excluded in this. And this is continuing, and we hope to see the data in a couple of months, I hope, because it's short-term treatment. It's a safety issue, of course. The issue here is, are these doses of the dabigatran, are they acceptable with regard to safety? And then if we pick out the right dose for the dabigatran in this kind of patients, then we have to go to a phase 3 trial where there's really an improvement of prophylaxis in this relatively low-risk patients for valve thrombosis and for stroke. So this is my last slide, chairpersons. If we summarize the doses here, for the several indications, the red lines means that these were not successful doses. The other ones are successful doses. DVT prevention, the low-risk venous thrombosis risk patients, the higher-risk venous thrombosis patients, the high-risk patients, stroke prevention, atrial fibrillation, secondary prevention of ACS, I think a very interesting field for the NOACs, since we have reached the ceiling, in my view, of antiplatelet therapy in this field here because of safety. We know that the newer antiplatelet drugs are effective there, but they have a safety problem, especially in patients who had a prior stroke. So it may be an interesting new field here, but a lot of red here already. Only the rivaroxaban very low dose has been successful in a single trial. Early post-valve surgery, there's very little evidence that there is something going on. When you look at the doses of the several drugs, for DVT prevention, QD doses are, of course, very attractive and are now used a lot, at least in my hospital where I work. Only apixaban has a BID dosing here. For the treatment, then the higher doses come up, of course, and BID dosing are preferred. Except for rivaroxaban, they have a single dose, but only after a few weeks. For stroke prevention, you've seen all the data. And for secondary prevention, I think we need more data to be absolutely sure that this is the right way to go. The sweet spot has been found there, and this is, in my view, not a chance finding. These are 10,000 patients who have been tested, 5,000 with this agent versus placebo and dual antiplatelet therapy. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. We have time for two burning questions before the coffee break.
I just have a quick question about the valves. Did in your Realign B, are you using only mechanical valves? Or?
Yes, only mechanical valves. Sorry, and shall I go back? Maybe it's better.
And what did you use in line A? What did you look at?
These were aortic valves only. These were aortic valves only because the surgeons advised us not to use it in mitral valves immediately. So that was the strategy in Align A, yes.
And B is only mitral?
Only in mitrals, yes.
Valves.
Yeah, and the long term, because if that is if you do aortic valves on the long term, the thrombosis and stroke risk is so minor when they have, of course, sinus rhythm. The incidence is so low that you, even for a phase 2 trial, you need thousands of patients. Therefore, the mitral valve was chosen for the phase 2 study.
Angeles?
Just a minor comment that we got in the EMA advice about extrapolation of those for different indications. And our response was, in principle, a statement, we want a dose finding study for the intended indication. That means that if you're going to get an approval for atrial fibrillation, you need to dose a proper dose finding study and not extrapolate data for dose finding studies of those of another indication like DVT prophylaxis or acute coronary syndrome. And the reason for that, I mean, it's up to the company at the end of the day to come with extrapolation of that and other indications, but the reason of that is overall two issues. One is, as you say, the background therapy in the different conditions is completely different, so you might have really, really different dose regimes, and the CHMP wants to know what is the dose of this indication. And then the target population. The population is completely different than acute coronary syndrome or atrial fibrillation, as you said. So as a statement, those response data can help in another indication as an approach, but the CHMP wants to see a proper dose-finding study for any specific indication.
Okay.
Thank you.